Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, pod people, and welcome back to Classic Ads from Simpler Times. This week, we grapple with tragedy in the street and in real life, grope our way through some fake sincerity about fake emus, squabble about whether Mr. Blobby qualifies as a puppet or not, and question Roland Ratt's choice of friends. You'll gasp in horror as the blame for the loss of 6,000 jobs and the closure of 11 factories in the US is heaped squarely on the shoulders of Jeremy Clarkson, and marvel at the 6 stages of separation between Nick Kamen and a hamster that died of boredom. All this as we try unsuccessfully to steer clear of postmodernism, and the tables are turned as the questioner becomes the questionee. Thanks for joining us again. I'm Steve Cook, and my co-host is award-winning advertising creative and TV ad director, Tony Williams. Together, we're looking at a TV ad for Levi's Stay Pressed Clothing that first aired in the UK in 1999.
Hello. Two, one.
It's really
Benedict Cumberbatch eating cucumber sandwiches.
He does that on Mindhorn. Yeah, something like that.
Benedict Cumberbatch. She's healthy shells. The rain in Spain stains mainly on the plain.
And what about, where's that thing that you said you feel like the ragged sombrero on the Donkey of Life? Where did that come from?
I don't know. It was the actor's name. He's in The Good Liar. I keep trying to talk to Mum and Dad about it. I feel like the ragged sombrero on the Donkey of Life. I don't know. It sounds like some Shakespearean actor.
Okay, thanks for turning up, Tones.
Oh, we don't? Sorry, okay. Hang on.
Is it on?
Okay, and scene.
I think the audience has definitely seen how the sausage is made now.
I'm ready.
The year is 1999.
Ooh.
Tony Blair is Prime Minister. The euro currency is launched, but the Brits don't want a bar of it. We're not touching any of that foreign money. We'll stick with pounds and pence.
How many euros in a maggie?
Johnny Morris from Animal Magic dies.
Oh, I can see him now with a monkey on his shoulder.
All I could find was really two really sad stories. Do you remember Rod Hull?
Yeah, with the emu.
Yeah. Rod Hull died. He fell off the roof of his house trying to fix his telly aerial.
You're on it.
I don't know why that's funny.
But, no,
because it's not funny. Because he died.
Have you ever tried fixing an aerial with an emu under it? The emu's scared of heights, that's why. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. How old was he?
Old enough to go up a ladder, apparently.
Apparently not.
I'm not drilling down in this much depth, actually. It's like I stopped when I... convulsing laughter at the idea of Rod Hull falling off the roof with an emu stuck under his arm. Elsewhere, Coronation Street shopkeeper Alf Roberts is written out of Coronation Street when he dies of a heart attack. And then also, awfully, 2 weeks later, the actor who plays Alf Roberts dies of a heart attack. So that was life imitating art.
Mm.
Not, I don't know why I put this in, because it's not really very funny.
There's a strong theme running into your, this is the year that was, you know. It's always got Coronation Street. Barry's joined, Susie's left.
It's like Coronation Street is the spine of a lot of people's lives, isn't it? Mm. You measure the years that eked out by soap opera storylines.
So this is the Prime Minister, and guess what happened in Coronation Street?
Yeah.
If you don't ever watch, just watch Coronation Street.
That's the format of the podcast. A Broadcasting Standards Commission survey indicates that many viewers believe sex is used on television in order to boost ratings.
Mm.
Elsewhere, research has revealed that most people believe that bears use the woods as a kind of open-air latrine. Fuck's sake. Broadcasters use sex to boost up ratings.
Is that a survey?
Whoever would have thought. Mm. Yes. And in a sign that comedy gold is always comedy gold... You'll love this. Channel 5 announces plans to resurrect It's a Knockout.
Oh, here come the Belgians.
With the original presenter, Stuart Hall.
Stuart Hall, brilliant.
But didn't Stuart Hall get U-treed?
Again, I'm thinking, yeah, the special branch there, I'm sure. But yeah, I used to love it with the big heads. Oh, look, the Germans have fallen over, but here come the Belgians. Awesome. Channel 5, it's funny, because, you know, I remember when Channel 4 came out. When we had only 1, 2, 3.
I remember Channel 4.
BBC 1 was had some good stuff on. BBC 2 was documentaries and nerds and odd people. And then your local, you know, ITV or Yorkshire or whatever it was. And then Channel 4, when that came out, that was revolutionary.
Channel 4 made Friday nights bearable.
Remember the big triangle?
If you weren't going out, Friday nights became interesting. Mm. Like if you couldn't round up your mates to get out on the slot, you were guaranteed you could stay in and watch...
The Weird Christian.
Paulie Yates.
Paulie Yates.
What was that? What was the kind of magazine thing that they had with Paulie Yates? It was Paulie Yates and that ginger twat that went on to be super famous.
Chris Evans. I don't know. But remember the Pink Triangle?
Yeah. Because he's listening now.
Well, do you remember Pink Triangle? They used to come out. There were movies that weren't really suitable for the younger audiences.
Oh, yeah.
Pink
Triangle. You know, at some stage, there would be a breast in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a pair.
I remember watching the James Whale show. And I was recording it for some reason. I saved up enough vouchers from the gas station to get one of those TV and video recorders all built in. I used to film and record everything. The James Whale show, remember him? He was a radio guy.
Mm.
And I interviewed someone, this guy rang up. There was a few guests and he rang up. He said, yeah, what's your question? He says, yeah, Georgine's got a sexy coat, yeah? He goes, Georgine's got a very sexy coat. Yes, very sexy coat, thank you. And they, sorry, I don't know if he said that or not. And yeah, of course I go, watch it again and again. And then, yeah, it was one of those times that the kill button didn't work at the station, I think. It was very funny. It was one of those great moments of TV that I remember was watching, like when Gisela died.
Tommy Cooper.
We were watching it. No, we weren't. We were recording it and watching the other channel, and we saw on the news that Tommy Cooper had died. We thought, oh, he's just on a show, live show. We're lucky we recorded it, so we were watching it, and he's there, and he suddenly, like, falls over in a silence, and the curtain closes, and everyone claps because they think it's part of the act.
Live on TV.
Tommy Cooper
died live on TV, is
dead,
that right?
Dead live on TV, yeah.
What a poor man.
Mm. Well, you didn't know, did he? But it's where he wanted to be, wouldn't it, on the stage? But it was awkward for the audience because they didn't know whether it was real or not. So when the curtains started closing, everyone just clapped onto lighter things.
Okay. It's 1999. We're going to look at an ad for Levi's. Do you want to describe the ad? Let's start off by describing the ad. I know normally we have a chat about it and then we describe it. But if you can describe the ad, then we'll get into talking about it. So let's do the middle ad, the one with the cop.
So the ad shows... Oh, hang on, sorry. I should rewatch it. Do you want it in detail or just general? So,
do you want my notes? Because I picked out all the bits.
Oh, why don't you describe it for a change?
Okay.
In a change of roles, in a role swap.
Right.
Why don't you describe the ad? Because this is probably one of the most creative, if you like, ads, aloof ads.
Ever.
No, one of the more
postmodern,
harking
back to the last episode.
Do you describe it from an audience perspective?
Okay, so we open on a car driving down the road. It's obviously in America because it's a left-hand drive car. We're looking through the window, and in the right-hand window is a yellow puppet which is dancing along to some techno music. Yep. The song that we shall know later on as Flatbeat by
Mr. Oizo.
The car gets pulled over by a highway patrolman. In between the highway patrolman getting off his motorbike and coming to the window of the car, Flat Eric turns over a postcard, which is held onto the dash by a rubber band, The postcard features a policewoman reclining on a motorbike. He turns it over and there is a picture of a pony. Once he's done that, he puts a cassette. So he turns off the techno music, pushes a cassette into the stereo, and it starts playing a song called What's Happened to Me. It's a country and western song by a bloke called Don Gibson. Flatterick then miraculously comes up with a monkey ornament. You know, one of those bobbling ornaments?
Bobbleheads.
You put it on the dashboard.
Yeah, the bobblehead.
And the monkey starts making a noise, like a chimp. So it starts bobbling around on the dashboard and starts making a chimp noise that carries on through the rest of the ad, which is actually quite distracting. The policeman comes to the window and says to the driver, can I see your ID? Flatterick opens the glove compartment, and in the glove compartment, there's a brown paper bag. When I first saw it, I thought he was going to pull a revolver out because it's that classic movie situation, isn't it, where the protagonists get pulled over by the cop. The unsuspecting policeman thinks it's just a random stop, but actually there are two killers on the run, and they open the glove compartment, take out the revolver and shoot him. He opens the glove compartment, the paper bag falls to the floor, and he gives him the two driving licenses.
It's passports, no?
I think they're driver's license, but they could quite reasonably be passports.
Yeah.
The policeman opens them and reveals the names of the two passengers in the car very clearly. One is called Angel and the other one is called Flat Eric. You don't have to make any kind of leap because there's a picture of the sock puppet in the passport / driver's license. So we find out that the guy is called Angel. Policeman asks them to get out of the car. Angel gets out of the car. Flat Eric doesn't, for obvious reasons, because he's a puppet. And we get an amazing product shot. So Angel is wearing a pair of stay-pressed trousers with razor-sharp creases and some kind of and a shirt that has amazing stay-pressed creases as well.
Stay-pressed shirt.
Stay-pressed. And then the cop asks if he can see in the trunk of the car. So they go around to the back of the car, open the trunk. What's in the trunk of the car, Tones?
More stay-pressed. Laid out like ammunition and weaponry.
Yes, exactly. All beautifully laid out, like the boot of a serial killer's car. Mm. They close the trunk. He says, thank you very much. And as they drive away, the cop looks down at the creases in his own shirt and realizes what a distressing mess he is compared to Angel. Cue music, cue logo, goodbye, thank you very much. 60 seconds of pure postmodern entertainment advertising
joy. Is that
joy.
What it was, 60 seconds?
60-second ad.
Oh.
And here's the ad in all its glory. Some dirty techno, a country and western B-side from a bloke you've never heard of, and a 24-word script, John Hegarty's Gift to the World. Check out the podcast notes for a YouTube link to the visuals.
Your papers, please.
Really happening to me? Everybody else seems to know.
Mind stepping out of the car, sir?
What a wrong can be. Why can't you?
Could you open the trunk, please? Have a good day, gentlemen.
What do you think of them bananas?
I think it's interesting. So let me ask you for a change. What do you think the message was there? What's your outtake, takeout?
Oh, in some ways, it's really complex. In some ways, it's not. And
okay.
We're back to that thing where, you know, we're back to advertising as entertainment. So if you were so inclined, if you were...
But what's your takeout?
My takeout was that it's a fucking piece of genius work that Levi's were in a barrel load of trouble and had attempted to advertise their way out of it with, let me see if you recognize any of these ads. So in the period between the Nick Kamen denim ad and when these ads came out, Levi's got into trouble because of the Jeremy Clarkson effect on denim sales. So Levi's stopped becoming cool because middle-aged men were seen to be wearing them. Levi's sales have dropped 13% in a single year, the year before this ad ran. In a single year, they had to close 11 of 22 factories in the United States. Mm. Do you remember them trying to advertise their way out with an ad which featured a child trying to fit a square peg in a round hole and then finally forcing the square peg into the round hole with a hammer?
No, I do not.
No. Do you remember an ad that featured a deeply ordinary 1950s businessman showing off the accoutrements of his life, which included six wives?
No, sir, I do not.
Do you remember a man in a shopping mall with no trousers on?
No, I do not.
And do you remember a hamster that died of boredom when the wheel in its hutch broke?
I do not.
Kevin the hamster's death upset so many people that the ad had to be pulled.
Wow.
So all those ads ran in the period after Nick Kamen and before this ad. I don't remember anything.
No, none of them.
I've never seen them on a reel.
No, neither have I.
Never seen anything.
Yeah.
The Levi's marketing director at the time is a woman called Amanda LaRue, is on record as saying that what she wanted was to make advertising that positioned Levi's as hip and underground and cool again. That's like a suicide brief, isn't it, for an advertising agency? Realistically, if somebody comes to you and says, I've got a global brand, it's on its ass, I want you to make it surreal, hip and cool, there are so many ways to fail at that brief.
Well, at least you didn't say make it award-winning.
At least you didn't say make me famous, because Amanda LaRue is not famous.
Mm.
John Hegarty is famous in a kind of advertising way.
Mm. Sir John.
So that was the brief that BBH got, was to make surreal advertising to make Levi's hip and feel underground.
Interesting.
They got this script together. John Hegarty went to pitch it to the client, and he took them through the whole ad in the way that I've just taken you through the whole ad, except he didn't tell the client that one of the people in the ad was a sock puppet.
Really?
That's how he sold it.
Really?
Yep. He didn't tell them until right at the very end. So he's going through a script, which is a Thelma and Louise style idea. He's saying that we're hooked up with two really cool people who are on the run, Thelma and Louise style. And what he didn't say is that Kevin the hamster has morphed into Flat Eric.
As you know, I asked him how he sold that ad when we used to work there, and he was in Singapore. And his answer was along the lines of, we showed them some work from this very creative French person, and said we'd want to use him in the ad. So I suppose it's a bit of a mixture of two, isn't it?
The backstory is that the Mr. Oizo, is actually a French electronic music maker called Quentin Dupieux. Did you know that?
Dupieux?
I don't.
That's not Jean-Paul or Dupieux, isn't it?
My French isn't that flash, but Quentin Dupieux. He had released a video for a piece of music that he'd done, which wasn't the music that's used in the ad, but Flat Eric had appeared in that. And then he'd sent it on a reel because he was an aspiring director. So he'd sent his reel round to a whole bunch of agencies in France and the UK. And there's that amazing tradition of advertising appropriating certain artistic endeavours. And they just went, yeah, we'll have that.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, we'll have that. Yeah.
That was it. It's worth noting that what's described here as the rich tradition of the appropriation of certain artistic endeavours is actually more commonly known as plagiarism. As it'll become clear later in the pod, however, BBH's behaviour in the matter of Mr. Oizo's work was almost a best practice case study of a multinational agency collaborating with an obscure artist to the benefit of all the parties concerned. Simpler times indeed. The original ad, which is not the one that we're talking about, but the one where there's a shot of Mr. Flat Eric just grooving along to the flat beat. That ad looks very similar to the video that was on the reel that John Hegarty's people saw. To avoid some copyright issues, they had to slightly change the way that Flat Eric looked. They changed the shape of his nose.
What do you mean copyright issues? Because it wasn't it, Mr.
So Mr. Oizo owned the copyright for Flat Eric because it was his creation, but he didn't want to sell the copyright to Levi's.
Okay.
Flat Eric under Mr. Oizo, I can't say Mr. Oizo's, auspices has gone on to have a whole life after that.
Oh, really?
So he still uses him.
Okay.
He's been in a video recently with Pharrell Williams.
So would it have mattered whether they use the actual real nose or a different nose?
Well,
fuck nose.
Levi's wanted something that they could say for the purposes of this advertising campaign we right. own.
Okay.
And Mr. Uzo was saying, I don't want to sell you Flat Eric. So they changed the nose. And I did read somewhere that apparently one of them, either Mr. Uzo, obviously Flat Eric or Mr. Uzo, doesn't have any ears. But I couldn't, frankly, I just couldn't be asked to go back and check that. Mm. Flat Eric became Flat Eric. I'm starting to really love this stuff where I go on the internet and just find all this crap.
This is all true.
It is all true. Flat Eric is called Flat Eric because in a very early script, he was going to be run over by a car.
Oh.
That script got binned, but they kept the name Flat Eric.
Because before that, it just looked like a bit of a Garfield, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and this whole, you know, in this whole spirit of postmodernism where you get all this audience involvement and people start getting very attached.
Mm.
So there are websites with conspiracy theories about why he's got Flat Eric. But it's the kind of involvement that when, you know, Amanda LaRue briefed BBH and said, make us famous, I think she probably would have taken it. I'm just not sure how famous they made Levi's. I think they made Flat Eric really, really, really famous. Well, yeah, because famous.
The music... You know anything about the music?
I know a little bit about the music, probably not as much as you.
No, go ahead. I'm dying to. I know it hit the charts.
Can I give you all my research?
Yeah,
let me do the dump. So this guy, Quentin Depew, Mr. Uzo, was 24 years old, and BBH did some kind of deal with him where he retained some of the merchandising rights for Flat Eric, and he also retained all the music rights. He directed the ad. He's 24 years old. He had a bit of a reel going, and he basically had a bunch of friends. So his DOP was his best mate. In the original video that was on the reel, the bloke in the car, Angel, became the guy in the... So basically, Quinton got all his mates together, his DOP mate, and he got Angel, the star, the human star of the ad, and a gaffer, and they're all from Paris. They're 24, they're all fucked up all the time. And they all went to LA and dumped £500,000 making three ads in LA. How amazing would that have been to have done nothing and then next day Levi's go, here's £500,000.
Yeah, pretty good. It's only upwards from there, isn't it?
Yep. So there's no CGI in the ad.
No, Flat Eric's real.
Nothing at all. Flat Eric was made by Jim Henson.
From the Muppets.
Puppet Factory in London.
But he already existed. Oh, they remade it with a different nose. That's why Frank Oz's line flat out.
But also, you know what it's like working on a shoot. So they had to have...
Stunt one.
They had to have three versions body in double. Case one got lost. Sick. And apparently the woman that took all the props over on the plane took one over and put it on the chair next to her.
Oh, God.
But, you know, it's like some little production assistant has been charged with getting Flat Eric to Los Angeles.
I've taken separate flights back from crew to make sure we all get back with tapes and everything.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Wankers.
The track's really interesting. So the track on the ad, which ultimately became Flatbeat. Quinton, or let's call it, are we calling him Quinton or are we calling him Mr. Uzi?
Call him whatever you want to call him.
Mr. Quinton.
Did you not call me late for dinner?
Mr. Quinton says that he wrote a 20-second loop of Flatbeat, the music in the ad, the day before they started shooting.
Well, you wouldn't have believed it, would you? Listen to the complexity of it.
But all his music sounds like that anyway, doesn't it? He says he wrote that loop the day before.
Quite possibly.
When the ads aired, it blew up so quickly that he had to make a 3-minute version, a dance track that became, you probably know more about this than me because you were involved in kind of dance culture. I wasn't. But, you know, the 3-minute version, the Flatbeat, went on to become number one in the UK, Germany, Norway, Belgium, Austria, and Italy.
I completely believe that, yeah. Especially in Germany and what have you. It's very much like an Ibiza track as well, isn't it? A novelty track, but it wasn't. Yeah, it's quite good. I mean, if I can remember, probably not the exact details of it, but if I can recite it now, you know, and have that loop in my head, you know, it's something quite powerful.
Flat Eric became only the third puppet to have a number one single.
Oh, I think we're talking in metaphors. I don't think so.
In the United Kingdom.
Hang on, let me have a guess. Would it have been Orville?
Oh,
is it? No.
Your capacity for storing shite in your head. Keith is a constant source of surprise for me.
Keith's someone in Orville.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Do you? I do.
Isn't it?
Right, Orville. Yep. That'd be Orville. One. The other one.
The other one's a bit more esoteric. You might struggle.
Oh, another puppet, Mr. Blobby.
Mr. Blobby wasn't a puppet. Mr. Blobby was a human in a suit.
Spoiler alert.
Okay, the other one was Roland Rat.
Oh, Roland Rat and his mate Kevin.
I can't even remember where.
Roland Rat and Kevin, yeah.
Where did Roland Rat come from? Where was that?
I think that was. Was that a TV thing? I'm thinking Phil Schofield. It was a TV thing. Philip Schofield, I'm thinking. For some reason.
I think I get.
Roland Rat.
I've got some vague memory about it.
Yeah, I can see Roland Rat and Kevin, my mate Kevin. Always on his BMX. What did Roland Rat sing?
There's only so much depth that I can go into in this before the internet just shouts back.
So we know who was fired off Coronation Street that week, but no idea what the number one song was about the feature. Okay.
Campaign launched with three ads, the three ads in the spring of 1999. At the time, Levi's had, you probably know more about this than I do, but I've been reading that Levi's had a policy of only running standalone campaigns. So typically, like, you would run an ad and that was it. It would never run again. There wouldn't be a sister version. There wouldn't be any other version. Like, the Nick Kamen ad was a standalone. The Mr. Bombastic with the Shaggy track was a standalone. Like, your Jennifer Love Hewitt ad, was that one of a series or was that a one-off?
No, it was a series because, well, yes and no. Because we used Alyssa Milano in the other one, but they weren't for the same jeans. Because it's not so much I don't think that they do campaigns or extensions, it's because each product is very different. So the Stay Pressed was one product. You know, what I did it for, pink jeans was another. Then we did oil-coated jeans, which is another. 501s would be one, 502s would be another. So it's more they kept them separate and distinguished by doing different campaigns as opposed to extending them generally. Because every single Levi's ad had a product benefit in it. The laundrette one, the shrink to fit where the guy gets in the bath, you know, they all had their own proposition. So they all had their own ad.
Okay, so they originally thought that they'd just run the three ads in March. Mm. They actually went on and made another five ads that ran in August and September for Stay Pressed again, featuring Flat Eric, which apparently they didn't normally do.
But it's for Stay, yeah, but it's still for Stay Pressed, isn't it? So as far as going for extensions, I'm not sure.
This ad won two Gold Lions at Cannes.
Wow.
And it won Campaign of the Year from Campaign Magazine. This is a bit I know that you love to pick apart. Levi's reported that volume sales of Stay Pressed increased dramatically over a four-month tracking period, growing by 21 times in the UK.
Wow.
19 times in Italy, 6 times in Spain, and 3 times in France. Flat Eric became the first fictional character to be interviewed by The Face magazine.
Oh, well, how did that work out for him?
But there's, if ever you want to be anchored in time, The Face magazine puts you right there, doesn't
absolutely
it?
I started reading The Face when it was slightly too old for me, and I was sort of, you know, getting there, but then I read it right till the very end.
And just to harking back where, you know, Levi sold product, but Flat Eric became a thing. The world went berserk.
Mm. That's interesting, because the actual product wasn't, we keep talking about Levi's, it's a very un-Levi's product, because everyone thinks about denim and jeans.
Yeah.
But these pants were kind of more like old age, pensioner, pedo, polyester pants, weren't they?
They were bizarre.
Which you had to have a very specific look to actually wear in the first place. I don't think it was for anyone just to run out and buy. Otherwise, it looked like you've been down the op shop.
The word is that Stay Pressed was a staple for mods.
Mm, could be, yeah.
In the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, could have been.
Looking at the ad and looking at the clothes.
All I see is the button-up collar, which relates to the mods.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing him running around in a pair of powder blue, you know, Farrahs.
There wasn't a lot of action like that in Yorkshire in 1999.
I would say not, no.
I think it was for the metropolitan elites. Flat Eric became a thing. It's a huge thing. Why, Tony?
I'm not convinced personally that the ads were great advertising. They were great films for a pretty good product, but I'm not sure the ads were fantastic. But yeah, the track was all right. It was multifaceted, wasn't it? It had the music, it had the character, it had the commercial, it had the uniqueness.
How much do you think they played for this? Because typically with a character, what you do is you're looking for a character that a demographic might project its values onto, right? So if you have, let's stick with Flat Eric. So you would have to make the assumption that the target audience was 18 to 25-year-old men. No women in this ad.
Mm.
If you're an 18 to 25-year-old man in 1999... what is so attractive about Flat Eric that you would be happy to wear a lapel badge or a T-shirt?
Well, he's anti-establishment, isn't he? He doesn't say a word. You know, his strength is in his silence. He's, you know, in those ads, he's playing the law, right? He's a smarter one. And so I think that's why people will wear a lapel pin of him. It's the same as wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt for people that understood or didn't understand, you know? It's, it stands for something, doesn't it?
If you're a planner, that's almost exactly how you would have pitched that to the client.
Which surprised me, you did an interview.
Fly Eric?
Yeah.
It's very loose when you...
Well, so would you give your hand at your backside for that?
From memory, one of the questions was, what is the significance of the postcard with the policewoman on it in the car? And he said, and Mr. Flat Eric.
He's not the policeman's wife.
Flat Eric says, if you look very closely at the photograph, she's wearing one leather glove.
Oh.
It's a sexual thing.
Ah.
That was the answer. You know, he wasn't, there was none of this kind of bollocks that you'd expect on social media where, you know, the first half of the sentence is fairly interesting and then the second half, then he would go, and I did that while I was wearing my Stay Pressed, bowling shirt.
There is an enormous amount of unnecessary detail in that, I think, in that whole ad. I mean, you went through a few about the song and the postcard and, you know, the passport or driver's license, all the detail, the naming of them. Why was that necessary?
And I think if you're John Hegarty, you're selling this to the client and saying that we are creating a world.
Mm.
We are creating a world. And if you're creating a world, detail is important because we're trying to move past caricatures, we're trying to move past stereotypes. Essentially, what we're making is a 60-second movie starring, I mean, there's only one star in that ad.
Mm.
Can I give you a quote from a journo?
Mm-hmm.
So a journalist, this is how seriously people were taking the zeitgeist at the time. The journalist says, Flat Eric is a person trapped inside the body of a puppet. He never speaks a word, yet we are completely convinced that he has a mother, a past, a way of making coffee, and a favourite side to sleep on. In just a few seconds, his creators have achieved what few modern dramas have managed, a totally believable character whose life we are only glimpsing.
Well, I mean, that's a lot to read into it, but I can see why. It's because, you know, he's not so passive. He doesn't just sit there. You know, he grabs things. He turns the postcard over. He's a little bit more animated than just sitting there, you know, with a hand up his back, isn't he? But it's a little bit, yeah. I think there must be short of column inches.
So John and his creative team sat there and said, what we need to do is cram this thing full of details we can persuade people that Mr. Flat Eric is a real character who wanted them to believe in his world, believe in the Thelma and Louise drama.
Sometimes things are just good because they're good.
What was it Bill Birnbach used to say? Universal human truths. So somewhere in that ad there is a universal human truth. And I would hope that at some stage a suit has gone into a meeting with the creatives and gone, you know what? We're just selling pants. Let's be silly. Let's be memorable. Let's create something a bit weird. Let's stand out. Let's be different. Let's not do what's expected of us. And that would be the brief. That would be the end of it.
But you know, a planner is worth his weight in gold if he's a good one. And it's normally the client who gets in the way with silliness. Proposition is whatever they want to call it now. Should end up being so good and simple, it could actually just be a headline on a blank piece of paper and run as an ad, right? So I don't think it's the planners that get in the way. It's the clients that give feedback, saying, oh, I think we should do this. Can we do this? Can we take this out? Can we put this in?
And Levi's as a client were more than happy once Flat Eric went global. They were more than happy to take the credit for having the courage to run these ads.
Well, yeah, they did.
The reality is that John Hegarty had to pitch that concept three times. Mm. The first time, he didn't even tell them about the puppet until the end. And they had to have two further meetings involving virtually every member of the agency and the Levi's client team before Levi's would go anywhere near it.
Mm. But you know, at the end of the day, what's on the screen is the evidence, isn't it? So they did. So no matter how you get there, at least they did it. So I guess they should take some credit in the end.
Yes, because they got there in the end. Mm. Risk aversion at the client end of relationships kills ads like these normally.
I guess the point being is they got there in the end, which make these ads stand out. But how many times didn't they, and how many other clients didn't for this one to be a standout?
I mean, generally speaking, clients are poor at their jobs.
I was just going to say, just hold that for a second. But I think it would be say, you know, when you suddenly have to reinsert words in a movie, and he goes, I think cards are pretty lovely. Hey, you've called John. And you should insert another nice word there. Cards are pretty amazing.
I mean, a lot of the times you go into a room to pitch an idea and you're working on the understanding that what a brand needs is it needs standout work, it needs to cut through. And to do that, it has to be a little bit daring. The client has to be a little bit courageous. And you're making the assumption that the client understands that. And most of the time, they either don't understand that Or if they do understand it, then they haven't got the balls to run the work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the way we talk about sometimes, we pick out an ad and talk about it as if it's a Halley's Comet amount of times it passes, you know, by us. This opportunity happens in agencies nearly every day. You know, when we talk yes. about trying to convince a client to do this and it had to be this, it's like it's some monumental moment, but it's not. It's an everyday
yeah.
occurrence.
Yeah.
So I don't think we go into meetings with clients trying to convince them that it needs to be this, it needs to be that. We just do what we do and hopefully, you know, all the stars align.
I mean, the bottom line is that every single day of every week, clients walk into advertising agencies and kill great ideas.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Every single hour, yeah. every single day, of every yeah. single week.
But if it didn't, we wouldn't have the great ideas. In order yeah. to make some great, they have to kill all the other ones, don't they?
And very, very early on, I was told that clients get the advertising that they deserve.
Mm.
I think Amanda LaRue probably got the advertising that she deserved with this one, don't you?
I think it's right up her street. Mr. Oizo, was it right up her street?
For both our listeners, the French translation of the word rue is street. Anyway, okay. Gutless average process-driven marketing graduates get gutless average process-driven work.
Who said that?
Me.
Oh. I thought it was Winston Churchill or something.
The fourth-rate suit.
Great.
No, I feel better now, actually, having unburdened myself of that.
So I think it's scoring time this time, and you're the one to score. You know, normally you ask me about craft, creativity, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's because you feel so passionate about this ad, and I'm really curious to see what you give it. So why don't we start with your scoring? I think normally it starts off with craft.
Brand.
Brand, okay. I think it normally starts off with brand. So what's your score for brand?
I'm giving it a solid 3.5 for brand.
3.5?
I'm giving it 3.5 because there are multiple issues. I think that the ad is actually a victim of its own success to a certain point, because people, and even people like us, I think, although it's 20 years later, the ad gets referred to as the Flat Eric ad. Mm. Nobody refers to it as the Levi's ad.
True.
It is the Flat Eric.
Hardly anybody would be able to recall Stay Pressed either, I would say.
I think the recall on Stay Pressed is pretty much zero. Mm. I'm not even sure Stay Pressed exists as a brand anymore. I certainly have not seen it for sale anyway.
You think the category folded?
The category folded.
It could be.
Ladies yeah. and gentlemen. 3.5. Do you think that's unfair?
No, not really. I think it's more than fair, considering most people couldn't recall the brand or the product. I think 3.5 is quite generous for branding. So
if the brand is still around, I think it's fair to be able to say, well, that's a great ad, but everybody calls it the Flat Eric ad. Nobody yeah. fucking calls it the Levi's
no.
ad.
No. And if we're questioning whether the brand is still around or that product is still around, no, I think that's a fair score.
Okay.
And the next category is craft, is direction. The next category is creativity.
The next category is casting.
Okay, the next category is casting.
Casting, I've got to give it a 5. Casting?
Oh, 5.
Yeah. Somebody cast a puppet.
They could have had Miss Piggy, they could have had Kermit, they could have had Fonzie the Bear, they could have had so many others. They could have had Orville.
No.
Already a number 1.
Part of the reason that I love this ad so much is the idea that to come up with such a great ad, irrespective of whether or not it's good for the brand or not, I just love the ad. The world turns. So Mr. Quinton makes his video.
Mr. Quinton.
Mr. Quinton makes his video with his mate somewhere in Paris. He puts it on a VCR. Let's say it ends up on John Hegarty's desk. Mm. The Frenchman and all his mates get called over. Hegarty tap dances the idea 3 times before the client will even contemplate it. They go and bin £500,000 in LA. They could have shot it in Dalston, but John's going, now we've got to go LA.
I think Dalston was Stay Oppressed. It's a different brand completely.
Do you know what I mean? It's like all those little details that all come together.
But it's an American brand, so it has to be America.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose so.
But the casting, though.
Casting 5, I can't go past it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love is when people become famous in this industry, it very quickly turns into Billy Big Bollocks and the bloke that you went to art school with who's not doing so well. You know, you pass him in your chauffeured car on the way to the studio to do the edit on your ad, whereas Mr. Quinton's gone,
Mr. Quinton.
Angel, We've locked in. I've got £500,000 to shit can in Los Angeles. Come on, you're going to be in the ad. So the guy that is in the reel is the guy in the ad. It's Mr. Angel. I love that. That he's done that continuity thing. So casting is his best mate who appeared in his reel for him because he couldn't get anybody else to do it.
Yeah.
And then the puppet is brilliant. He thought of the puppet, but he's gone, you know what? He's my puppet. I found he apparently found him in a flea market in Paris, the original puppet.
There's some old
lady. But Mr. Quinton's gone, this is my sock puppet. He's my Mr. You can have the idea, but I want you to change it a bit so that mine is still mine. And Flat Eric's got a triangular nose and may or may not have ears. Because Mr. Quinton's gone, fuck it, I don't really want the money that much. Also, I love the copper.
I thought you were going to tell me that he was, did you recognise the copper? He was the father-in-law of the woman that killed herself in Dallas's next set. I thought you were going to tell me something
like that. I didn't get that far.
He does look familiar.
Because what happened is that Flat Eric became so immensely popular that there is not a single column inch of newspaper coverage, reportage, anything at all about Angel.
Well, I couldn't remember his name until I couldn't recall his name until he just mentioned it.
He gets no press.
Not got nothing to do with Los Angeles, any sort of subliminal link there.
He's got no press. He's got nothing. And he's 50% of the Thelma and Louise part of the deal. And the cop, nobody knows who he is.
Mm.
He doesn't appear. But the casting as a highway patrol policeman, I thought was great. Mm. Down to the, he's slightly balding. He's a little bit overweight, but he's not.
Oh, he's got that porch. Yeah, he's probably going to lift Eric out of the window and just kick the shit out of him.
Five. Okay. It's a really solid five as well.
All right. Okay. Craft.
I don't feel like I'm qualified to talk about Craft except as a passive consumer of the media, in which case I've got to give it a five. I would give it a 10 if I could. At the risk of outreaching myself, I do like the way it's shot. It's kind of loose. It's a bit loose. It's a bit grainy. But the thing that gives it a fire for me is exactly the thing that you mentioned earlier on. It's all those details.
It's quite interesting you should say it's quite loose and grainy because it's an FSA press, which is all about precision and sharpness.
And I do love the product shot. I love because you're not really sure about what's happening up to the point where he gets out of the car.
Mm.
So it is a bit grainy. It's got that kind of California sunset.
It's got the golden hour time. That'd be the only thing I'd say, actually. I've got to say, if there was a criticism, and it's impossible to avoid, is the grade was very much of the day. So it does date it. You know, if you notice, a lot of the ads that we're watching, yes, you can tell by quality, whether it's a shot on film or it's a beta dub or something like that we found online. But you could never really tell the edge by a grade. Any of those ads that we looked at, this one you can start to tell. The grade was very much of that sort of era when there was a look, which, again, you can't tell because you're obviously when you're in the era, you're in the era.
And that's why I say I'm not really sure that I'm the right person to do Craft, but from my point of view, I loved the brown paper bag that falls out of the glove compartment.
Yeah, really good.
I love the storytelling component of it. It's a very tightly, even though it's a minute, there's a massive amount of stuff happening in it. And then I think it's about 40 seconds through, he gets out and there's the product. And you go from this kind of slightly loose, slightly grainy thing, and there he is in his full stay-pressed glory. There's such a juxtaposition between what's gone before. And the guy's acting. He just kind of stands. He's very non... I don't know.
Very loose kind of... Yes. I am giving you a nut. Don't look at me that way.
And then you go around, you know, then we move around to the back of the car and there's the trunk lift and the reveal of more product.
Yeah.
I just think it's amazing storytelling. Mm. It's a five. It's a strong five for me, regardless of the fact that you can't remember the fucking brand at the end of it.
All right. So what's the total?
Well, we've still got...
Oh, sorry.
We've still got one more.
What's the last one?
Creativity.
Oh, okay. Creativity.
I don't see how you can not give that a five for creativity.
Okay. Well, this is up with the big ones.
What do we got? 5, 10, 15, 18.5. It's not up there with a bloke in a gimp suit selling fizzy water.
That's true. See, that's a difference.
Fizzy apple water. What did I miss? So we've got the suits point of view. What have I missed?
Nothing, I think.
You chose this ad again. This is one of yours.
Just because I think it's just so different. The ads we look at, we always remember for being like a fun bit of entertainment or, you know, great characters or for a product we recall. This is kind of a mixture of everything. It was an entertaining film for a well-known product. Oh, sorry, well-known brand with a little less known product, but just so quirky and different that it extended into the rest of the fabric of society, if you like, than a regular ad. So it was worth looking at and scoring, I think. Yeah.
From the agency's point of view, strategically, the idea of creating a character is quite risky, isn't it?
The TNC is that was that it wasn't their character. they had loaned him, if you like. They attached the brand to him. So if it had gone arse over tit and you know, bombed, they could just brush him off and never know Flat Erica again.
Do you think so?
Well, who knows? Who knows?
So anecdotally, Levi's got some audience research done before the ads aired, and it tanked.
Yeah.
The audience hated it. And they went, back to Hegarty, and John said, well, you spent half a million pounds on it.
Mm.
It's a sunk cost. You might as well run them and see what happens.
Yeah, true.
And the rest is history. Mr. Quinton Uzo's Flatbeat, man, became a global phenomenon. That thing shifted so much merchandise, became a part of the zeitgeist, was interviewed in all seriousness by The Face magazine. I mean, this strategy works. The creation of a character works in this way when it's for a product with disposable income, right? So shirts and pants. Mm. Can you do this with what are effectively distressed purchases, like insurance and washing powder?
You can create characters. I think the difference is that those brand, you know, other kind of categories like insurance and whatever, you're trying to normalize those so they become, you know, easier to engage the consumer, because nobody normally wants to talk about insurance or whatever. So you try and bring them. With this one, you're actually trying to set it to an aspirational, completely out there kind of thing in the first place, which will attract the left field people.
Mm.
So yes, you can, is the answer, I think. You can do it for different reasons. You can either make it out there so it attracts the outliers, or you can try and normalize it so it attracts more people. A character will work either way, if that's the question.
Because apparently the strategy at Levi's end was, we're not selling any jeans. We've got this brand, Stay Press, which is a type of clothes, which is non-jean clothes.
Mm.
And they were looking to get growth. As you alluded earlier, though, it's not the kind of thing that every man and his dog was wearing. So it's a very niche product.
And also pretty big. Imagine, right? Levi's, probably the most famous name in jeans and denim. This would be one of the first products, besides maybe Dockers, but that's a sort of separate conversation, that they would have advertised, which weren't jeans. It's like Ford suddenly selling sneakers, you know? How do you accept them doing that? Because it's not a jeans ad, is it? It's a clothing. Yeah. And you say, yeah, Levi's, that's very different to start with, isn't it?
Yeah. I really enjoyed talking about this ad.
That was good. I can tell.
I love this ad.
And, you know, it's not true. You can't overanalyze shit sometimes. Sometimes you look at this and you go, oh, God, what a bunch of white that is. It's basically a puppet. But everything has a reason.
I feel very much like a punter with this ad. And in some ways, I feel like I want to love it without being manipulated. Well, I don't want it to feel like it's manipulating me.
Well, it's funny. It seems it's probably one of the most contrived ads, but ends up feeling less contrived.
Yes.
So are the other ones.
Which is its genius.
Yeah, very good.
If Sir John was here, I'd buy him a beer.
I don't think you'd drink it.
Thanks very much, Tones.
Thanks, Mr. Oizo. Flat.
Thank you, Mr. Tony.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed that.
It was good. Thank you.
I love that. Thank you.
Stay pressed.
Lovely work.
See ya.
Later.
Sorry. I was getting uneasy.
It's now rapidly becoming traditional for Tones to end the pod, rocking from side to side on his chair and chewing his knuckles, looking like a four-year-old boy, trying to hold off the inevitable until the end of a particularly gripping episode of Thomas the Tank Engine. On a side note, I did try to explain to my four-year-old that it's perfectly normal to shit your pants from time to time, but he's still taking the piss out of me. Thanks for giving us a listen this week, as usual. You can hit the subscribe button if you fancy listening to two middle-aged men talk about old TV ads and laugh at their own jokes. Until next time, thanks for listening to Classic Ads from Simpler Times. We'll catch you soon. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.